Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United. My name is Jamie.
My name is Jerry. Welcome to our show tonight.
Pleased to bring you the show tonight. We've got DVD talk. We've got some romantic comedy talk.
Yes, we do. We got romantic comedy. We got demented comedy. And we have The Mentalist.
Yes.
I've never seen The Mentalist, so I didn't know where to really rank it. So
yeah, we will be talking about that a little bit later. The season one of The Mentalist came out, and we'll be reviewing that and possibly even giving it away if we can find a brave soul to call in and embark on a movie trivia.
Just call in.
I'm gonna make them work for it.
Oh, you're gonna make them work for it? Okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Go for it.
Got to play along. It's all in fun.
Okay, sounds good to me.
So this is not the Roman Polanski show, obviously. That takes place.
I hope not.
That takes place this Sunday, October 4th, at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can listen live. You can listen on the archive and definitely afterwards if you missed the live show.
Yes.
We've gotten a lot of coverage on the show based on prior events. Let me just make it clear, and I'll make it clear on Sunday, too. This is part of our director series where it works as a retrospective of a particular director's work. We've done it in the past with people like Paul Schrader and Brian De Palma and David Lynch.
Right.
Now, Polanski's movies are undeniably brilliant and important in the history of film. And so we wanted to pay tribute to those films. And so we set out to do this about a month ago. Now that the present incidents that have occurred, a lot of attention has been paid on this particular show now.
Yes.
So you've read about it in Variety, Entertainment Weekly, New York Post, Wall Street Journal. It's all over the place.
MTV everywhere, Hollywood elsewhere, Cinematical. It's all over the place.
Yeah, and they've talked about in connection with our show, which is flattering.
It is flattering. Well, we're generally not this topical. We're really never this topical. I don't think with any of the things that we've done in the past we've ever been. We did not do this show for this reason.
I mean,
we're just not like that. That's not the way we're wired.
Well, essentially, we're not a scandal show. We're a movie appreciation show.
Exactly.
And that will be the tone of Sunday's show.
It's not tabloid. We're not here to do any sort of tabloid stuff. That's not our thing.
Yeah. Now, what have you been up to, Jerry, since our Sunday Michael Rooker show?
That was probably the greatest show ever. No, I like that show a lot. And
yeah.
I think he liked the fact that I brought up Brown's Requiem, so I thought
you scored a point.
I scored a point. You know, I got to score when I can, man. I mean, you know, I just have to. Just got to try. I mean, you just got to go out there and come out swinging. But, no, what have I been up to? Just work. I like to say other things, but just really work. I did watch Repulsion on, speaking of Polanski, I did watch my Blu-ray of
You saw Repulsion. The Blu-ray. How's the quality of that?
Oh, the quality's wonderful. Beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
It's just really exquisite. I think that and Chinatown are probably my all-time favorites. And I have to honestly say The Pianist. I like The Pianist a lot, too.
Right.
But those
you know,
the
Chinatown is coming out. It's in a anniversary edition on Tuesday on DVD. Mm-hmm.
Wow, God, the timing in all this is just stuff. Well, I mean,
it's been, 35 years? 35 years, man, since Chinatown.
All right, yeah.
My God.
No, Chinatown is, I think, you know, I guess Chinatown is probably my all-time favorite. I know that Kim Morgan wrote a a piece for that was actually on the Huffington Post, you know, like a reprint of something that she had written a while ago about Repulsion. Beautiful essay on the film. She really understands that film better, I think, than anyone. But I got to say, as much as I do like it, it's a very uncomfortable film to watch. And I guess that's true of a lot of his films. They should be, I think, in some ways uncomfortable, given
right.
what's happening to the characters. But I do Chinatown, I think, is just one of my all-time favorites. I really got to say, it really is.
Yeah, outside of Mr. Polanski, there are other movie headlines out there, aren't there? I've been in a bubble for the past few
days.
Have
been in a bubble. This thing has been very exciting, very nerve-wracking. I'm trying to think what if there's any other anything that I've been paying attention to. I mean, I'm looking forward to like seeing movies like Whippet and Zombieland and the Michael Moore movie, obviously.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I haven't been.
That's all this weekend, isn't it?
I think that is all this weekend. And then next
wow,
week,
all three up
that's
against
gonna
each
be,
other.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, those look very good. And that's you know, I haven't really outside of the Polanski thing, it's just like sort of swallowed up everything. You know, I haven't sadly been able to pay that much attention to what else is going on. I do know that the Weinsteins shut down Halloween 3D.
Yes, that was announced today. That and Jessica Alba in
Meet the Fockers,
yeah.
That's
what passes for news nowadays.
Yeah, but no, the other thing, the big thing, and I'll be honest with you, I have not watched it just because I'm really, you know, I got a confession to make. I like to wait to see the trailers in the movies. I don't rush to see them online. Now, the trailer for the new Nightmare on Elm Street has come out, and the reaction is right down the middle, love it or hate it.
Right.
I've
seen
are,
it.
What do you think?
You know, I'm not obsessed with that genre anyway, or that particular film.
Right.
I think it's a stronger premise than a film, but like most Wes Craven movies for me. But I don't have a problem with it. Actually, you know, I do have something to say about that.
Okay.
And let me bring up Aaron, and then I'll say my piece, and then we'll start this interview.
What a bold way to do
it. What a bold way to go. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, what's up?
Man?
What's up? I tell you, the trailer I love, and I'm just kind of a diehard fan, but I love the new Book of Eli trailer.
Oh,
I haven't
trailer.
Seen the new one yet, but I appreciate you upstaging my comments on the Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Okay, my thoughts on Nightmare on Elm Street. I think that they produce some of the best trailers. Michael Bay's horror movie production company, whatever
Platinum
that's called.
Platinum Dunes, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And they're all essentially the same trailer. If you look at Chainsaw and the sequel that they did, and then this one, the way they structure the music and they structure the trailer itself, it's all essentially the same trailer. But it's highly effective for that genre trailer. Yeah.
Okay.
Even a Friday the 13th trailer is
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes it look like an exciting movie.
And the only thing is, I will say this, the one thing that Elm Street has for that these other remakes don't, and I guess it's the one sliver of hope, is that, you know, nothing against Robert Englund, but we actually have a, quote-unquote, a real actor playing Freddy. So.
Well, I think that's where the freshness will come from, will be from his portrayal and the excitement of having an Oscar nominee playing that role. By the way, Aaron, did you change phones or something? It's like you took vocal hormones or something. It's much louder now.
No, well, I'm on a my headset.
Oh,
okay.
There you
I
go.
Tell you what, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Yeah.
I'm on my headset. There you go.
There you go.
Well, you sound good.
Thank you. You sound good too, man.
Thank you, buddy. I do have a sexy voice.
You do, man. Manic.
We're
sexy beast.
That's right. We're going to be talking about DVDs a little bit later. But first, we're going to play this interview with the stars of a new romantic comedy called Peter and Vandy. It opens up in theaters on Wednesday, October 9th. And it's a really appealing movie, uniquely done. It stars Jason Ritter and Jess Wexler, two great up-and-coming stars in the independent field. And it's a great movie, and it's a great conversation we had with the two of them. So enjoy it. This is Jason Ritter, Jess Wexler, for Peter and Vandy.
there anybody sitting here?
No.
I'm Peter.
I'm Vandy.
You can get, instead of the fried rice, a bed of salad, something a little more healthy. Less threatening. Sorry.
You apologize a lot.
I don't know. This is the kind of stuff I would always want you to tell me. Bring it on. It's just been great getting to know you. I love you. You don't have to say anything back.
Okay.
I'm not happy, Randy.
Is Peter coming today?
Peter and I aren't friends anymore. Peter wants to be friends with other people while he's friends with Randy.
You can have more than one friend.
I have something for you. And I realize that you're dating someone. It's the crossword puzzle. Southern University, for short, the answer was Vandy. And I was like, hey! You'd run through my mind more than a few times.
Everything that happened with us happened for a reason. This is who we are together. We're just going to stay the same way. It's not going to be any different. I love you.
You are the person that I have to be with. Do you feel the same way? We ordered from this Thai place.
That's the one where you said the pad Thai tasted like vagina.
I said this pad Thai tastes like poon Thai.
Pick a menu, Peter.
When you read the script, what drew you to the script and particularly to your character, Peter?
Well, I think when I initially started reading it, I realized pretty quickly that it was all out of order and that I was reading something a little bit different. So that sort of made me sit up in my seat a little bit. And then as I was reading and I started to get to know this character, Peter, a little bit more, I don't know, there just was a lot about it that rang really true to me, mm-hmm. as far as relationships go, and, you know, the complications of trying to be a man in the world, today. I don't know, it just, there were a lot of things that seemed authentic about relationships, and so, and there, you know, a lot of Peter's insecurities are, you know, perfectly lined up with my insecurities, and I also apologize for myself a lot.
Huh? All of our insecurities. There's a lot of universal themes going on there.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, generally in movies, the main characters are supposed to cover all of those up to be as, you know, charming and dashing as possible. You know, you never see 007 kind of unsure of himself. You know,
right,
that's
right.
Not what that character's purpose is in the world. But then when you grow up watching all of these movie stars and all of these romantic movies where everyone's super handsome and charming, you end up sort of feeling like, well, is there any hope for a guy like me? You know, if when I walk into a room, every woman doesn't turn and look at me, then how do I find love in a relationship? So, I don't know, there just was a lot of it that struck me as you know, it was a story that I felt like I wanted to be a part of telling.
Well, the script sort of right away, at first I was kind of confused, because I was like, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. I was like, oh, it's out of order. And then as I continued to read it, it just felt very true. I think it just has this very realistic, true vibe about how relationships work and how time, long extended periods of time, wear on people who are
uh-huh.
in love with each other. I guess I had a positive and a negative reaction to Vandy, which is one of the things I liked about it, because they're both so imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
They're both riddled with humanity and different habits and insecurities and yet they're in love with each other. So they're trying to fight through all of that stuff to see if they can stay together.
I spoke to Jason about this, but I wanted your take on it. What do you think, by telling the story out of sequence, what does that do for the film?
Well, aside from the fact that it kind of makes it more of a game because you don't know which,
mm-hmm.
which, we don't tell you what scene or what time period it is, so it kind of leaves the audience thinking, oh, where are they now? And then they have to figure it out based on our, like, the depth of our history, what kind of history we seem to have with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there are little visual clues all over the place. But storytelling-wise, I think that it's good to juxtapose the scenes where right after you see us fighting or right before you see us at our worst, where you're not sure if we're going to make it, you see one of the first times we met where we're giggling and falling in love. Because I think that's the way our brain works. Like, you just have a fight with your boyfriend or something happens, and then you're trying to make a decision, and then the next thing you think about is when it was good or something. Oftentimes, we don't think chronologically through our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like there's that aspect to it, and also you can see them repeating their same patterns, just they're extended. The patterns have accumulated. They have an accumulated effect.
Yeah. And the two of you are wonderful together, you and Jason. And I'm wondering, did you spend time, like, getting to know you time prior to shooting?
Not before shooting. We met, like, 2 days before shooting.
Wow.
And then I just have to give Jay the credit that he thought that we would be a good partnering because, I mean, Jason's, like, the best guy in the world. He has such a huge heart. And we were able to shoot during the day. And we shot chronologically, so we were getting to know each other as the characters were getting to know each other.
Yeah.
And so we would shoot during the day and then go back to one of our places and essentially rehearse until it was time to call it a night and just hang out with each other and yeah, like, personally get to know each other and actually let each other in so that we didn't have our guards up around each other or we weren't
mm-hmm.
nervous with each other. We really, it was kind of shocking to me the intimate space that we broke with each other in such a short period of time. It was kind of a special experience.
This was shot in New York, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, all of it was in New York.
What is it about love, stories about love told in New York? What is it about that city that makes those kinds of stories really special?
I think what's unique about the New York, about the New York love story is that the people who are there are usually so ambitious for
mm-hmm.
their own lives that the kind of couples that come out of that are sometimes a little intense.
Yeah.
And also, you're constantly surrounded by people, and you have usually a remotely small space to live in. So, I mean, I feel like one of the main things about Peter and Vandy is how do you end up living with the person you fell in love with? Like, you fell in love with this person, great. That's, like, the best part. Now, how do you live with them? And in New York, it's really hard to live
mm-hmm.
with the person you fell in love with because you just can't get away from them.
yeah.
It's like, we have this, like, one-room flat, and granted, it's, like, the best of a one-room flat that's in the movie, and it's still a little too small. and then there's also just everything that makes the city electric and alive. It gets dark, and then there's twinkling lights everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That makes for romance.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've read where you've classified the film not as a love story, but as a story about love. And what's that distinction to you?
I think that distinction to me is that, you know, to me, a love story usually is about falling in love and that initial magical period. A story about love, to me, indicates all of the difficulties and complications that go along with loving someone for a long period of time through that initial period, to a period where you're used to each other, where you're not, you're not necessarily immediately excited to see that person. You know, you live with that person, you see them every single day.
Right.
And how do you survive through that? You know, especially if it doesn't match up with what you've been taught to believe love is supposed to be. I mean, we all would love to be, you know, some kind of Prince Charming or something like that, but what happens after you sweep the princess off her feet and you take her to the castle? That's a long life. Happily ever after lasts a long time. It's hard not to get on each other's nerves. So,
yeah,
that was sort of the distinction for me, is that they're not always loving each other in this story, but it
right.
still is about love at the end of the day.
And your writer-director on this film, he actually penned this is a play and played your role, is that correct?
Yeah, he wrote and directed the play version of this about 4 years before we started to shoot, and he got a couple awards for it, and yeah, he played Peter, and I guess on the basis of that, he was able to raise enough money for the film version. And one of the giant changes that he made was to make the two characters about 10 years younger. I think he felt like their immaturity would give these characters a little bit more hope. You know, maybe they're just working through these things initially, and their patterns might not be so set in stone that this is where they're headed for the rest of their lives.
It is a unique, and you may mention this, it is a unique structure in that it jumps around in terms of time. It's out of sequence. For you, what does that give that the arc of that relationship and how that relationship progresses as you watch the movie, other than just being a unique kind of...
Right. I remember when I was reading it, I was going, wow, this is really unique. But then that's not the whole test of the script. It's, you know, well, what happens when all the pieces are put together? Is it is it an interesting portrait, or does it not work? And, you know, what I think that the structure does is take it from being a story that we're used to seeing, and it turns it into like a study or a portrait. So that you get to see their patterns, and you get to see you get a sense of their future and of their past even a little bit more, because and you have more insight into their relationship than even they do, because a lot of times the audience is asked to go along for the ride, and you fall in love with the person at the same time that the other character does, and you go on the whole journey exactly with them, whereas this one separates you from them and allows you to, you know, to see who they are, to see where their buttons are, so that when you see one of their buttons starting to get pushed, you can know what's about to happen. I think it plays up I also think it makes you feel closer to them. You know, when you see them in a huge knockdown, drag out fight, you've just seen them be completely in love with each other. So it's not like in order to get to that fight, you've had to drag them through things getting worse and worse and worse until they're fighting like that, and you think, well, they should definitely not be together. You know, you still see the good parts because they're all right next to each other. So
right. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about the film festival experience, because I know you've been to film festivals with Peter and Vandy. Actually, my girlfriend has nothing but great things to say about you. She met you and hung out with you a little bit at AFI Dallas.
Oh, man, that was a great festival.
Yes. What do you take from those festival experiences?
You know, they're kind of like my food. I mean, the festivals, those audiences are the ones who are telling me whether or not I'm on the right path. I mean, truly, I especially in the independent film world, it's not like, you know, everyone's making millions of dollars and you're basically making a movie that you believe in, for nothing more than the desire to tell that story. And so when you get to go to a festival and you see that story told and you get to interact with the people who have just heard that story for the first time, if they like it, it's the best gift ever. I mean, you can't buy that kind of reaction. You can't put enough explosions in your movie to get that true reaction. And the other thing about film festivals is the audience is all film. They're all film lovers. They're there because they've paid attention to their publications that are telling them that there's an independent film festival right over here. And, you know, I've met people who have driven, you know, 100 miles to get to their film festival that's the closest to them. And that is one of the most heartening things I've ever heard, you know. And I think it shows that people, that there is a real desire for a choice. You know, we get so much shoved down our throats that when we see something that is a small little miracle, like pretty much every independent film is, because, you know, if it's gotten to the point where it's in a festival at all, it's been finished, they've finished shooting it, they've finished editing it, somehow they've gotten it all together, it didn't fall apart at any point like so many do. So it's just exciting to share that and to talk to people about it and, you know, listen to the conversations that are brought up by it. Instead of conversations like, well, what would happen if, you know, alien robots came down and, you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of conversation and rhetoric, I guess, that can be brought up by those kind of movies. But I think that generally people are looking for something new, and it's the film festival experience is something that is my most valued experience in my whole life. If a film that I'm in is going to a festival, I will do everything I possibly can to get there.
It's really nice to see other people's movies, but it's also really nice to finally see how people react to what you made, because you're never sure if it's going to work for an outsider. Especially as an actor, you're so inside of it that you lose perspective of how the movie comes across to the virgin viewer. It's really touching to get feedback from people, even people that sort of aren't rooting for them at the end. Like, some people would come up after and they'd be like, those two should not be together. Like, just end it and find someone better. Someone who's more right for you. But I mean, it really swung all over the place because people also weren't sure if we stayed together in the end or not. People can kind of try to figure that out when they see it. But a lot of couples actually came up and they were like, it made me feel less alone, because once that falling in love phase is over, it's very confusing to know if everything's okay, because suddenly it's not always like a yes, this is awesome, because it's not outrightly awesome all the time. It takes so much to continue to give that person attention.
Yeah.
And so what was nice at the festival was some older married couples would come up and say, I feel like I fell in love with my wife all over again, that I do love and hate all this stuff about her, but we fought through it, and that's worth something. It was nice to have people come up and say that it reminded them of the love that they have.
It's interesting because it does deal with so many universal themes, and anyone that's ever been in love, anyone that's ever been alive, definitely has their own insights into that kind of dynamic. So I'm wondering, this coming from a writer-director who's adapting his own play, did you find that there was room to instill your own thoughts and feelings on relationships?
Oh, definitely. The thing that was great about Jay, I mean, he didn't even audition us because he wasn't trying to find, like, the Vandy he had in his mind or the Peter he had in his mind. He just, he interviewed me, and then he interviewed Jason, and then he thought we would be a good match. And then the scenes are written so well and so true to life that he kind of let them play out as we would play them out, because they lived or died on our chemistry more than
mm-hmm.
each of us doing, like, being slick or funny or anything all the time, because I think he wanted in there, like, sometimes you tell a joke and it bombs, and then you look like a jerk for a second.
Mm-hmm.
and that can actually be, that attempt can be something that's attractive to somebody else. And so he let us just be our messy, whole selves. And when we came to some of the parts where we were wondering if we were going to break up or not, he even started to rewrite the scene because he thought that it needed to take more time, that we weren't just going to have, like, a fight and break up, not after so long, that breakups are more commonly epic, like,
yeah.
You're just breaking up with somebody for forever. But he time cut into it, so you're constantly seeing our moods just shift. Like, in the middle of the breakup, you start laughing with the person again. And
mm-hmm.
then in the middle of the breakup, you realize you're still going to break up, but then you don't.
Yeah.
How at the end. And he rewrote all that based on when we were shooting, based on the way Jason and I were together.
Okay, Jason Ritter and Jess Wexler. The movie is Peter and Vandy. It opens up in New York and L.A. Wednesday, October 9th. That's a good primer on
that. Isn't that a Friday, October 9th? Or?
Yes, it is.
Well, hang on. Yes, it is. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I don't know where my mind is.
That's all right. No, it was a fascinating interview. I actually really enjoyed listening to that.
She sounds cute. Well, she is. She's in. She was in Alexander the Last. She was the lead in Teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been around. She's got a lot of great credits to her name.
Yeah. And of course, Jason Ritter, Happy Endings, and Mumford, and you know.
Yeah, Mumford.
Happy Endings, ironically, was not an alternative title to Teeth.
No, of course not. No, I like Happy Endings a lot. I thought it was a very well done film.
Yeah, yeah.
And not for the obvious reason, okay? I love those kind of independent ensemble cast movies. So.
Yeah, Don Roos. Yeah.
Yeah, Don Roos. Really good film from him.
I just like Happy Endings.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah. Well. All right.
Do you want to bring up this thing?
No, I don't.
Okay.
We're going to start giving away some DVDs now, or talking about some DVDs. If anyone wants to participate in a special trivia excursion to possibly win a DVD, give us a call now, 718-508-9477. Now's the time to do it. Come on, have some fun, live
have
a little. Give us a call.
Buy me a drink.
We'll start with you, Aaron. You actually had a few words about the new Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, well, we're about to enter, I guess, the fourth quarter, and so that means holiday stuff. And so really the studios start bringing out the big, you know, the ultimate collector's special,
mm-hmm.
you know, deluxe editions. A lot of initials there. So it really kind of kicked off yesterday with the UCE, the Ultimate Collector's Edition of Wizard of Oz. And it's just this, you know, Wizard of Oz has been on DVD and tape and disc many times. The last DVD was in, I believe, 01, and that was a pretty good, pretty massive collector's edition. But now it's Blu-ray for its 70th anniversary. And it's It's a pretty jaw-dropping experience.
Not bad.
You know, so it has all the bells and whistles from the last box set that it came in, plus some new stuff, including the When the Lion Roared 6-hour documentary on MGM, which is
mm-hmm.
worth the price of admission. And it's
okay.
got a lot of swag. It's got a watch, replicas of the budget, a booklet. But I mean, the thing is, everyone's talking about the transfer itself, and this is one of the most delicate, probably looking films of that era. I mean, it's a film that starts off in that sepia tone, and then it switches into Technicolor. So there's a lot that could have gone wrong, and it's in this transfer. But the Blu-ray transfer is just. It'll probably be in the top five for this year among critics when it comes to like the best Blu-ray.
Excuse me. So, you know what I've noticed? I've noticed with the new Blu-ray format, a lot of talk about, and you could see this in an HD whenever you watch television shows. A lot of things are more noticeable, the imperfections and such. And what I've read of The Wizard of Oz. You're amazed that you can't see imperfections,
mm-hmm.
The makeup, everything.
Yeah, I mean it. I mean you. It's not so much the imperfections, but you see the detail in the work. You know, because this is obviously there's no CGI. There's nothing computerized.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing the if you want to call it imperfection, but you're seeing the work, you're seeing the sturdiness of the craftsmanship of the matte paintings, of the log cabin, of the road. You're seeing, it's very unbelievably tactile.
By the way,
I
think that kind of technology that they had then, the matte paintings and such,
mm-hmm.
which are considered rustic now, some of these things that they went for their effects, it's completely... a part of the charm of and the lasting influence of that movie. I think if they remade that today, even with the same cast or such, and they use modern technology, it would somehow lose its charm.
Oh, yeah. A lot of these things do.
It's
innocent. That's so great about some of the. Sometimes we see these films that are made today that are shot on location. There's no CGI or anything. I mean, that's. I agree with you, Jamie. It's just charm, but it also just shows you how they had to work so much harder.
Mm-hmm.
To really go that extra mile.
We got a call. Let me take this call because I don't want to pass this up. This is this is a trivia contestant here. 817. Who am I talking to?
Kevin.
Hey Kevin.
Hey Kevin.
Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thanks so much for calling in. You're calling in to play some trivia with us, right?
Yes.
Okay. You have two choices here, and I can tell you're excited about this, Kevin.
Yeah, I haven't heard this much enthusiasm. I haven't heard this much enthusiasm since someone tried to sneak into the Avatar sneak preview screening. Okay.
You have a choice of two. You're playing for one of two packages here: The Mentalist complete first season on DVD, or Nip Tuck season 5 part 2 on DVD. Which one would you like to play for?
The Mentalist.
The Mentalist. Okay.
I would have gone with Nip Tuck, but okay, that's just me.
Here is, it's his game to play. Jim.
I know, I'm sorry.
All right, I have a trivia question for you concerning mentally challenged, I say challenged, characters in films, mentally unhinged characters in films to coincide with the release of The Mentalist, season 1 on DVD. Here's the question. Which actor originally optioned the book Silence of the Lambs with the intention of directing the piece and playing Hannibal Lecter?
I know.
It's not. It's.
You probably already have this, Aaron.
I do not have the answer, actually.
Can you make up an actor?
Just
say Al Pacino.
Al Pacino?
No, that's wrong.
Anthony Hopkins was in it, but
Right, right. Okay, we're going
to
give – well, hang on. Somebody else is on the line. We're going to give them a chance. 203.
Yes, it's Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
How are you guys?
I finally get to hear your voice, man.
I know, really.
Good to talk to you.
I feel like a giddy school kid here. I've been to you guys for 2 years now, and I've never actually – yes.
Well, there's only three people listening, and it's the three of us, so don't worry about it. No reason to be nervous. Now, Kevin, you're still on the line. You might have a chance to play again.
Okay.
Did you want to answer this question for the Mentalist, or did you want to go for Nip Tuck, Patrick?
What do you think, guys?
Oh, he's got a support system behind him.
Let's see.
Oh, you got lifelines?
You know what? I hear the Mentalist is pretty good, so let me do that one.
Okay. Did you hear the trivia question? Did you hear the trivia question I just asked Kevin?
I didn't.
Okay, here it goes. Which actor originally optioned the book Silence of the Lambs with the intention of directing and starring as Hannibal Lecter?
Wow. Let's see. There's no multiple choice on this, guys?
I know. I do better at multiple choice, Patrick. I have my own guess, but I mean,
this is like NPR difficult here.
Yeah, it is, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
don't. What's the name of it? Don't. What's the
don't
name of that show?
Don't tell me.
It's like a puzzle,
don't tell
man.
Me.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Don't tell me.
Wait. Don't tell me. Right.
Yeah.
Just say Clint Eastwood, Patrick. If you don't know.
It's Clint Eastwood.
No, it isn't. Sorry.
You are such a horrible man.
I love doing that. I love Patrick. He knows it. Okay. Now, Kevin, I'm going to go back to you. This is no longer for the Mentalist. It's our trivia question for Nip Tuck. Are you ready?
Okay.
The category is actresses who have had plastic surgery. Here comes the question. Her birth name is Cheryl Sarkisian LaPierre.
Good luck, Kevin.
I think I know it.
The only person I know is that excessive. So, beyond that.
Kevin, the clock's winding down. You only have 9 minutes left.
Do we have a buzzer, by the way?
we don't even have
theme music. You think this is a professional show? We should have a Jeopardy-type theme.
Or some Xanadu music, at least.
Yeah, this is the best I could do. Okay, while you're thinking about this, Kevin, here is your thinking music. You ready?
Okay.
That's Kevin thinking what the answer
That's
is.
That's really helpful.
Her birth name is Cheryl Sarkisian LaPierre, actresses who have had plastic surgery.
Oh, I'm stumped.
You're stumped? All right.
Do I get a go?
That means we're turning it over to you, Patrick.
All right. She's a wonderful, used to be a wonderful actress. Now we don't know what she is, but she goes by one name, and her name is Cher.
Yes!
Very good.
You did it, my friend.
One Hip Tuck. I'm coming over to your house to watch it.
Actually, my loves that show. I've never watched it, so.
You've just won. Well, it's a very attractive DVD box set, and it's got it's very prominent cleavage on the cover, so I was automatically drawn to it.
What are you, all of a sudden, Pat Sajak? I mean...
What, Pat Sajak talks about cleavage?
No, but all of a sudden the game show host persona takes over.
All right. So you're going to Hawaii. Season 5, Part 2, Nip Tuck, is going to be on its way to you as soon as I can get to a post office.
Fantastic. That's great news,
guys. See, look, your Wednesday night's looking up already. I mean...
That's right.
Now, Kevin, I feel bad about Kevin, though. I got to offer Kevin another chance at something.
Do you have something in your apartment you can give him?
Yes, here it goes. I can't wait to give this away. Kevin, I have a screener copy from a couple of years ago of M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening. No, I'm kidding.
I like that. I'll take it.
I wouldn't do that to you, Kevin.
I'll take it.
Okay, Kevin, you'll be playing for the DVD of Observe and Report.
I thought I was going to get that.
All right, Kevin.
Okay.
You really sound enthusiastic. Folks, really, pretend like we're giving away like cash or something, really, or free Kool-Aid or something. I mean,
All right, Kevin. You're cool in our book, man. Here's the trivia question. Observe and Report is frequently referenced as a comedic version of what film?
Oh, it's a comedic. I think of Paul Blart Mall Cop, but
anything is a comedic version. Schindler's List is a comedic version of Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Oh my God, we're gonna get in trouble with the Jewish community now.
Wow.
Did you, Kevin? How about? Can I give him one hint? Can I give him a hint?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, you know.
I'll give him a hint, Kevin. This is a hint, and it's a pretty big hint in my book. Think Martin Scorsese.
I'm thinking, and nothing's coming to my mind right now.
Do you know any Scorsese films?
No, I know Martin Scorsese. I'm just trying to think of something that relates to Servant Report.
New York.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help. New York. They're all in New York.
Not all of them.
Not all of them, Aaron.
Yeah. You're right.
I don't want to give it away, you know.
You're right. Kundun doesn't.
It's a part, it isn't.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not Kundun.
There you go, Kevin.
I
guess,
I don't know it.
I guess they eliminated Kundun from the list.
It's a yellow vehicle.
What was that?
Chris Christopherson. And it's not Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And it's Chris Christopherson has something to do with this movie. He's featured in the movie, but not in it. And it's a Martin Scorsese picture.
He was the bomb in Convoy.
Oh, Kevin, I feel terrible. I feel terrible.
Kevin, I want to slip my wrist now.
How about this? It's in the 70s. They just concentrate on the 70s Scorsese films. So, I mean, if you sort of know the plot of Observe and Report, what does that kind of resemble of his 70s output? Obviously, it's not going to be New York, New York.
Always like Escape from New York, New York.
I like the sequel, Return to the Escape from New York.
Hang on. Mork from York, that's my favorite. Okay, Kevin, any answer?
No answer.
I think you should give it to him anyways, man.
Kevin, you are awesome for calling in. And
the answer's The Last Waltz.
you should give it to him, man. He really tried hard. You should give it to him.
Yeah, I could tell it. I could tell it was a great, tremendous effort. So I will get this movie to you. I'll get The Mentalist to you. How about that?
Okay.
would you like an upper with the Mentalist? I think it's illegal to mail drugs, but I can do it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
I will get in touch with you, Kevin. Thank you so much for calling in, buddy.
Thank you very much for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Take my word for it. The Mentalist is better than Observer Report.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Kevin.
I mean,
Patrick?
The Mentalist.
Thank you, guys. We really appreciate you calling in, both of you. Really
you won Nip Tuck with your Cher answer. Oh, by the way, we didn't give the Mentalist answer. The actor that originally optioned the book Silence of the Lambs with the intention to direct and star as Hannibal Lecter was Gene Hackman.
Wow.
I thought it was Buck Henry. That was my guess.
Buck Henry.
All right, never mind. See, I'm just going to shut up for the rest of the show now because I'm...
Charles Nelson Reilly. You got it. Rip Taylor. Flip Wilson.
This is great.
Yes, you're a winner. You know, you were a winner before just listening to Movie Geeks United, and now you're actually a winner. actually winner.
Listen, and I can't wait for your Sunday show.
Yeah, we're scared about it too.
I'm like, you know, nervous, excited. Yeah, I'm scared to death.
Jamie has already changed the locks.
No, I didn't. I'm actually sleeping outside for the next couple of days anyway, so you know it doesn't really matter. But
that's not unusual for Jerry.
No, it's not, especially on a full moon. But
I appreciate you calling in, buddy, and call back in any time because we love you. You know, I think the world of you.
I think the world of all of our listeners.
You guys, man.
I'm very happy when they call in.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Patrick.
Bye-bye. Thanks, guys.
Okay. So we gave away two DVDs.
I think that's awesome, and I think it's good because it makes us look good. You know, people say, hey, we can call into that show and get free stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But they got to work for it. But,
it's like their what's that, what's the company that the government bailed out?
AIG.
AIG.
They're AIG, and we're the government. It's awesome.
And, you know, more than I've been thinking about Scorsese's filmography, I'm realizing a lot of films aren't in New York, and it's like he barely shoots there. But anyway.
That's true. It's too expensive to shoot there now.
Yeah.
But that answer was Taxi Driver. What comedic version of Observe and Report?
I mean, it's like Gangs of New York was shot in Italy.
Yeah, yeah.
How wrong is that?
Yeah, well, I thought it was weird. There was a movie that was named after a city. Oh, Chicago. And Chicago was shot, like, in New Mexico or something. Yeah,
Vancouver.
Vancouver. Anyway, so The Mentalist is now available on DVD. It's the first season with great extras, including deleted scenes, featurettes, cast and crew interviews, a nice package as well.
Actually, it's very, very successful show.
Yeah, it's a great show.
I watch
it with my parents. So.
Simon Baker?
Yeah.
Simon Baker's a good actor. I like Simon Baker.
He's found a perfect fit here in The Mentalist.
Yeah,
he is the show. Nip Tuck, Season 5, Part 2. I'll give the information on when that is available.
That's the show Jamie just watched with his dad.
everyone in my family loves this show. I've never really watched much of it, but everyone in my family loves that show.
You know, and I think our listeners need to know, it is very hard for Jamie to part with the Nip Tuck just for the cover art alone.
Yeah, yeah. Because you can't find that stuff on a computer.
No, you can't, yeah.
It's available October 6th, which is next Tuesday on DVD. And so Patrick is getting that.
He's psyched.
He's really
I bet he is. Yeah, we're making dreams happen here on Movie Geeks.
I haven't heard this much excitement for free stuff. I mean, we're giving away Hemlock. I think people have been more excited.
Also available on DVD from Warner Brothers is Smallville Season 8 and Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I'm sorry, I'll say it like Schwarzenegger. The Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, man.
Sarah and Connor.
I understand that show finally started to come together towards the end, and they canceled it.
Yeah.
No,
but
I know people that were crazed about it, and they were really pissed off when it was canceled.
Yeah, I mean, the last episode, actually, the series finale was actually really well done.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty good.
A very good, very well-produced show. I mean, they spent some money on that show.
Actually,
they did.
The TV spots were head and shoulders, above and beyond better than the Terminator Salvation movie.
What I don't understand
about
the Salvation movies, why they were made such a point of we have nothing to do with the TV show, or you know, vice versa. I would have thought it would have been a great piece of synergy to actually try to, like, work with each other, instead of like confusing the hell out of everyone.
It would have been great just for like a 30-second bit to have Christian Bale show up and just start yelling at everyone.
Well, I mean, he does that on a daily basis. It sounds like anyway. So I mean.
So those are now available, as is, of course, Observe and Report, and Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, which we talked about at length last show, but those are also available in widescreen.
So let me just make a quick
format.
Plug here for one more title, because it's a unique release pattern, and a lot of studios are going to start following this, and that is the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs on Blu-ray has just comes out next week on October 6th. A full, I believe, five to six weeks before the DVD collection. So studios are trying this out, really up the visibility and the marketability of Blu-ray. Paramount, I think, is going to try this, and like I said, Disney's doing this with Snow White of releasing the Blu-ray package 6 weeks before the DVD street date to really kind of up the visibility on Blu-ray. And this is the third Disney classic, if you will, to be on Blu-ray. And like the other two, it's just, which were Sleeping Beauty and Pinocchio, they're just kind of jaw-droppingly perfect.
Yeah.
Of these three, that if you have to only buy one, this is probably the one to get. Now, granted, personal taste, I have a personal preference for Pinocchio, but for story and historical purpose, this Snow White rendering in Blu-ray is kind of a landmark. It's one of those like the Godfather restoration last year.
Right.
It's one of those key films that, you know, really know how to demonstrate the Blu-ray player.
Right. Okay.
What's coming up from Criterion? What's new on the Criterion front here?
Let's see. October. So we got really like four big titles. I think there's an Eclipse series, but if my mind's drawing a blank. But we have Vin Vendors, Wings of Desire.
That's right.
Which is a DVD and Blu-ray.
Oh, Blu-ray. That's awesome. Okay.
We get a Blu-ray of Howard's Inn, which is one of my favorite of the Merchant Ivory films. Mirrenaire's Monsoon Wedding.
That's another good one.
Tiver Hook movie. And I know, I think he even does a essay, so I know my man Armand White's going to be in Hog Heaven for Costigan vs. Z.
Yeah, he does.
Give
me Shelter.
Is that going to be Blu-ray? Is that going to be Blu-ray as well, Z?
I want to say I'm about 75% sure on Blu-ray, but I could be wrong. Unfortunately, I don't have my notes in front of me. That's unfortunate. I'm ill-prepared. I should be shot. Gimme Shelter is actually going to be in December
to mark
the 40th anniversary of Altamont.
Yeah.
Which, like everything else, 1969, kind of the end of an era. Woodstock, Altamont, Sharon Tate, it all kind of comes together.
Wings of Desire, November 3rd. Monsoon Wedding, October 20th.
Right.
Howard's End, November 3rd. Gimme Shelter, December 1st.
Right.
That's the lowdown on Criterion.
A lot of good stuff from Criterion. Another odd one out there, and that's coming out in November, and we'll talk about it in November, is they're doing Michael Ritchie's Downhill Racer.
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice. It's a good choice.
70s Michael Ritchie is pretty great stuff with that and Smile.
Smile's wonderful.
Smile's great. And then, and of course, the big box in December, more than Gimme Shelter, is the Akira Kurosawa 25 at 100, basically commemorating his 100th birthday with 25 of his films in a DVD package.
Wow.
So that's kind of the mother load of Criterion at the end of the year. You know, December and January usually light months from Criterion. So that's kind of their big release in December is that box set of Kurosawa films, which is, I know everyone's going to be clamoring for. And I'm a little surprised. I had heard that Shay was coming out on Criterion. I assume it still is, but I guess it won't be in December. I guess it'll probably be in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's odd because how that rumor flared up. To no avail. I mean, everyone was expecting a Shay announcement.
And this is something maybe we ought to talk about, for a later show, you know, because we're coming up at the end of the decade, and I'm planning something kind of in November to kind of highlight Sex, Lies, and Videotape coming out on Blu-ray. But we ought to consider possibly what we want, you know, picking our film of the year, our filmmaker, our film of the decade, and our filmmaker of the decade. And I started going over the credits, and even though there might be a couple of questionable films or a couple of duds or something we don't like, I'm formulating this thesis that I think Steven Soderbergh might be the filmmaker of this decade. Going from the year 2000, where you had Brockovich and Traffic, and just going all the way through up until this year with Girlfriend Experience and The Informant
and
all that stuff in between, you know, Shay, Bubble, Good German, the Oceans films.
I wouldn't be adverse to it, because there is a lot of truth in that. I mean, there is a lot of truth. I mean, Soderbergh has been all over the place. And like you said, it's good and bad. I mean, but there's...
But the thing that's amazed me is the diversity of projects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soderbergh can do anything.
Yeah, he really can.
And he sets out to do everything, you know?
Yeah.
He's not a one-genre pony.
He doesn't let anything get... Also, if something doesn't work, it's not like he takes a break. He's ready to go on to the next... Regardless, ready to go on to the next thing.
I mean,
that's what I love about him. He just keeps going. He has no... Never slows down.
He's getting ready to do his... As he describes it, his first, quote-unquote, action film.
Yeah.
And then the biopic of Liberace, which I think could be terrific. And then, of course, this 3D musical of Cleopatra.
Those
three films are, I mean, those would be three different films by different directors, but the fact that he has his hands in, and then he's just completed the final edit, from what I've heard, on his Spalding Gray documentary.
I have a question, Aaron. Actually, somebody like you, I mean, you would think that you would feel like Liberace would be his action film.
Yeah. it's the action film I'm waiting for.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean,
my dad actually spent time in Liberace.
I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, yeah.
Spent time or spent time?
Yeah, it's an episode my mother doesn't want to talk about. He said that Liberace was a very nice guy. He spent time with him in Vegas the morning after his show. This was in the 70s, and he had his assistants with him by poolside and everything, and just sat down with him and talked to him for a while, and said he was just congenial, nice guy.
Well, I'll ask you, Jamie. Is Barry a fan of Liberace?
You know, I've never spoken to a fan of Liberace, but his prowess is hard to deny. You know, I'm talking about his prowess on the piano.
Of course,
I thought that's what you were talking about. I would never think otherwise. I mean,
I think obviously his biggest fan was Annie Wilkes from Misery.
That's right. I thought that, you know, I'm excited about Michael Douglas playing Liberace, but I was excited years ago when Robin Williams was up for the role, because I can see the facial features that match.
Yeah.
You know, we have a number, a call, 917 area code. I'm going to pick it up here. 917.
917, are you there?
That is New York.
That is New York. It's a New York cell phone number, if I'm not mistaken.
New York, New York, you're on the line.
My name is Martin Scorsese.
He's called to praise Observer Report.
He's called to win the Observer Report DVD.
Observer Report, and he wants to praise the kinetic energy of Stephen Sommers.
Oh, I know it too, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to close off for tonight. Sunday night, big show.
The big one.
Would you say, in all seriousness, Jamie, I mean, we've been joking, we've been catty, but would you say that this upcoming Sunday show is probably the biggest show of the 3 years of this show?
It has the potential to be. Yeah.
It has the big potential to be.
It has the most publicity of anything. Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously got the most press coverage. And, I mean, if all goes well, you know, no glitches or nothing, I mean, to me this could rival Dolph Lundgren.
I don't see why not. I mean, really, I hope with all this.
Smart aleck.
Dolph Lundgren was great. Dolph Lundgren was a great guest. So
There's a reason why I like you, Aaron. It's because you're a smart aleck.
I was being serious there, but I had to undercut the seriousness of it. But
Sunday show we just want to put on a good show. That's our objective.
That's all we want to get through it, put on a good show, and you know, deliver, you know, hopefully people listen to these interviews and come away with a, you know, a real honest
appreciation of the films. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now
about the movies.
Let me say, tomorrow check Entertainment Weekly, because they could very well post advanced sound clips of our tribute of our retrospective show on Sunday.
EW.com, folks.
Yeah, EW.com.
Terrific. They've already they posted a little something related to this and related to Jamie's scoop, but tomorrow at EW.com should be kind of amazing. In fact, should be bright and early. You shouldn't even go to bed.
Yeah. You know what? That's what I did. I haven't been sleeping because I've just been checking the computer all day. You know.
Yeah, I know. It's just you can't. I mean, every hour something new comes up. So.
Zombieland getting good reviews, decent reviews.
So is Whippet.
Whippet looks really good. That's probably
Whippet looks really good, and some of these art films are expanding. Obviously, Capitalism Love Story is expanding. The one that I'm interested in, and this is odd for me because I detested her last film, but I'm really, really excited about Bright Star. I think it's the
Jerry
that
saw.
Is the
I saw it. I saw it like last week. It's a beautiful film, I'll say that. Yeah, what was her last film was In the Cut, right?
Yeah, which
yeah,
other,
no, that was awful. This is a lot better. I don't think it's perfect, but it's a lot better than In the Cut.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't compare it to In the Cut. It's two totally different. different films, but I mean, really, one's just a really lame adaptation. Was that a Susanna Moore novel In the Cut? Or,
Yeah.
And it just didn't go anywhere. And this is definitely more in the spirit of The Piano and probably Angel at My Table and Sweetie. Definitely more in the vein of her earlier films. It's a beautiful film. It takes. I mean, if you're into it, and especially if you're a poetry major like I was, you definitely.
I was an English major. I have an English degree, and so I
you
know.
You never
a little,
know it.
I know a little of Keith, and thank you, Jamie.
I remember one of my poetry teachers told us all about Keith one day, and I always found very tragic. And it definitely plays into that. And I think the three lead performances, because I did not, I'm wondering, I didn't recognize Paul Schneider immediately. But he is very good, and I would actually say, just watching him, I mean, Ben Whishaw has played a poet twice now. He's played Keats and Dylan in one lifetime, and that's a pretty incredible feat to have accomplished at such a young age.
You played Bob Dylan?
Remember, he was in I'm Not There.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, but it's really Paul Schneider who I find just fascinating, that he takes these parts, and a very, a very underrated actor.
Yeah.
But from All the Real Girls and just a lot of range. I was just really blown away by that.
I'm really excited about Paul. I'm excited about Abby Cornish. I really liked her in Stop Loss, but Paul Schneider. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to see that he's gotten his act together after that Dorothy Stratton incident.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
I knew that was coming. All right, guys.
God, I'm terrible. The Pitchfork mob's going to come after me.
It's been a lot of fun. I've had fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to go pass out now. join us Sunday night, 6 p.m. Eastern. Join us on Facebook. Join us on Twitter. You can find us all over the place. And visit our website at moviegeeksunited.net for the latest updates on show content and our archive of over 500 interviews. All right, gentlemen, thanks so much for joining tonight. We'll see
all
you
right,
next time.
Have a good night, have a good week, and we'll see you Sunday for Roman Polanski.
Bye-bye, everybody.
All right, good night.